Hey, it's Michelle Beadle. That's right, the Michelle Beadle. You're welcome. You love talking about sports. I love talking about sports. You know the only thing cooler than talking about sports? Sports! And right now, all your favorite sports are on SiriusXM. I'm talking every NFL game, every game from the NBA, NHL, MLB, every NASCAR race, golf major, major conference college sports, and all the top games in the WNBA. If it gets your heart pumping, it's on SiriusXM. To start your free trial of SiriusXM today, visit SiriusXM.com/believe.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Griplock Foundation Disc Golf's weekly podcast. I'm Hunter, joined by Connor this week. This is Trevor's beach week.
Yep.
And then next week's your beach week.
Yep. Next week's my beach week.
So 3 weeks, three beaches, three boys.
Yep.
All different.
We came back from the West Coast, and we were like, all like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, I feel like it's weird. I saw my, we had like a family get together yesterday, and I saw my brother-in-law for the first time. I went to a wedding with him the day before we left, or 2 days before we left, something like that. And then for the West Coast, that is.
Mm-hmm.
And then he couldn't make it to the beach. I went with Liz's family. And so he normally goes there. Okay. He normally goes, but he couldn't go this week. So I saw him then I was gone for 2 weeks to the West Coast, and then gone for a week to the beach, and then just saw him again yesterday. And I walked in, I forgot we went to the West Coast completely.
Yeah.
I just walked in thinking I hadn't seen him for a week at the beach. I was like, man, it's been a little bit. He goes, yeah, it's literally been a month. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I saw you at the end of May. Now it's the end of June. I was like, oh, shoot. You're right.
The West Coast is like a weird, like hazy.
It's like a fever dream.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'll like think about it. I'll be like, oh yeah, like I put this shirt on. I'm like, that was a thing.
Everywhere
by
I
the
go,
way,
somebody,
these shirts are available. Flippy Disc Golf.
Everywhere I go, someone asks me how the trip was.
Yeah.
Like at church yesterday, I like 10 different people. Like, How's your trip? And I'm always like, good, really good. Way too long, but really good.
Yeah, 2 weeks is a very, very, very long time.
I was at Chick-fil-A the other day, and somebody was like, how was your West Coast trip? And I was like, good.
Who are you?
Yeah, I didn't know who it was.
That's funny. We're going to kick the show off with a little Patreon question of the week. If you're not aware of what we're about to do, so Patreon, we have a weekly podcast called the Heiser Club Mailbag. The Heiser Club is what we call our Patreon, and they get to ask us any question they want. And this past week, I was gone, so a lot of the questions were, well, since Hunter's not in the office, and then a question. So I didn't pick any of those. I felt like that was cheating our patrons.
The questions were bangers last week.
Yeah. So I just picked a pretty fun one, but if you want to see their answers to all those questions of since Hunter's not here, X, Y, or Z, you can head over to patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. Actually start a 30-day free trial, and if you don't like what we're doing, cancel within 30 days. It costs you nothing. Nothing but some sweet time of you watching content, because there's a lot of it over there. We're actually about to do our Patreon monthly video, which is going to be safari golf with the winner picking the next hole, so that'll be a lot of fun.
I think we're going to do a fun video
at Falling Creek, I think's the plan, so... If you don't want to miss all that, I'll head over to patreon.com/foundationdiscgolf. But the question I picked for this week comes from Riley Hamill, which his profile picture on Patreon is a really old version of Brody Smith, which is funny.
That's funny.
It says, if you could create a crazy / unconventional rule for a disc golf tournament, what would it be?
I remember
you can
one.
Just reuse your answer.
Yeah.
Because I don't have an answer yet.
I think my answer was, he said crazy, so I went really crazy. So this was my non-serious one. Was every time you have a spit out, you have to weep like a baby.
Oh.
Legally, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you went like completely out there.
I went completely out there, yes.
Okay.
I'll think of a different one, but that was my like completely out there one.
Well, I'm gonna go a little more serious.
No, that makes sense. It makes sense, yeah.
I think I'm gonna just go, you know, I think I'm going like, this isn't for like the pro tour. This is just like, this is a fun disc golf event, like a disc golf tournament. And so I'm going to just say, for every birdie you get on the course, period, every birdie earns you a mulligan.
Interesting.
So if you birdie hole one, you now have
a
mulligan.
So if you're on fire, you're going to be really on fire.
Yeah. And the mulligans, like, they count towards your birdies. So like if you like have 10 mulligans built up and you use all 10 of them to earn a birdie, you earn another mulligan.
If you don't birdie every hole, then there's just something wrong with you.
Well, you start with zero, though.
Yeah, so
you have to get a birdie to get a mulligan.
Mm.
And then you have to use the mulligan wisely to earn yourself more.
Dang.
That's the video right there.
That's a fun idea. I feel like somebody could
Yours
run
is
away.
Also a video.
Yeah.
Yours is a Patreon video.
I think Trevor said something along the lines, I think it was to this question, it'd be fun to have like a, maybe it was an obscure like hole design or something like that, but to have like a fairway roll like laid out where you have to throw a roller, but the fairway is like, it's like a really tight line that's like a little track for your roller.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen the,
it'd be cool to make a roller only course. That's like, you know, like the like pump tracks for like bikes, yeah, and like bike, like they have the like the wall that goes around like that, to make like a roller only course where you have to just,
fun. I'm against pump tracks because they put one in and move the practice basket at Peachtree Park.
It is very true.
Yeah, I'm anti pump track, so I'm offended that you brought that up.
I am too now.
We had this past weekend the Des Moines Challenge in Iowa go down. Gannonburg's. Actually Gannonburg's hometown. I was going to make the joke.
Des Moines. Is he from Des Moines?
No, he's from Iowa. I always thought he was from Idaho. And then we started the joke that he was from Idaho and we stuck to it.
I can't keep up anymore.
But then I just thought Des Moines was in Idaho. You know, until this moment, I was literally thinking when I was watching the tournament, I'm like, why didn't we play Pickard Park when we were in Idaho? That's how much they're just intertwined in my head. I was like, I wonder how far that was from Boise. It was just a different state. Anyways.
Very far apart.
Yeah, well, maybe not.
I actually have no idea where.
I'll look it up.
I don't know where Iowa is.
So
I
think this it's is in like middle. Indianapolis.
That's where
Iowa. That's where this course was.
A joke right
I'm
now?
Dead serious. To
you know, Indianapolis isn't in Iowa, right?
Yep. I'm aware. I'm pretty sure that's where
also
this
not
was.
How yeah. you spell Boise.
We don't have to. Wow, they're far apart.
Yeah, I think.
Wow.
I was like.
Wow.
Like, isn't Iowa like mid?
They're not even close. It's a 20-hour drive. Iowa's over here next to Nebraska in South Dakota. It's below like Minnesota.
We are really dumb.
We are very dumb.
I'm still not quite sure how we let it slide that there's an Indianapolis in
it's not really.
Iowa.
It's not Indianapolis. It's Indianapolis or something like that. Like it's.
Okay.
Let me That's look. Funny. Pickard Park. Iowa. It's in Indianola.
Oh, but it's still called like Indianapolis.
No, it's Indianola.
Oh,
I just thought it was something else. No, I'm the same guy.
No, it said on the thing.
There was a different one. That was a different place.
Whatever. We've
ignore
got to move
it all.
On.
Des Moines
move
challenge
on from the map. No
results.
More map.
Results. We're away from the map. Kristen Tatar took it down. Shocker. Missy Gannon came in second. Jen Allen, Stacey Ronsley, and Macy Vela-Diaz all tied in third. And then on the MPO side, we had Gannon Burr taking it down with Isaac Robinson coming in second. And then, Big listen Burr. To this slew of people in third, Greg Barsby, Calvin Heinberg, Ezra Robinson, and Gavin Babcock.
Wow.
Quite the foursome there, tied for three.
Dang.
Tied for third, that is.
Good for Greg Barsby.
Then the big storyline, I think, here was the weather delay. So that changed this tournament drastically. So the MPO only played two rounds. Their Saturday round got canceled completely, so they played Friday, they played Sunday. FPO lead card was nine holes into their round on Saturday when the weather delay happened. Now, obviously, that's a big storyline regardless because this was a two-round event for MPO. FPO had to start at 6:30 Central Time on Sunday and play 27 holes on Sunday, but they were able to get all three rounds in. But why I think it was even a bigger storyline, and people on Twitter thought I was joking with this tweet, but I was actually asking a legitimate question because, so if you look at FPO, going into round two, again, on Saturday, have to keep in mind, they played nine holes, and then the second nine holes, they started on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Through the nine holes they played on Saturday, Paige Pierce was four under par and had opened up a lead on Kristen Tatar. I believe that she had opened up a two or three stroke lead. I want to say it was three, but it could have been two. But Paige Pierce was in the lead of the event. Kristen Tatar was in second, starting Sunday on the back nine.
Mm-hmm.
So Paige Pierce had all the momentum and a lead through nine holes. Then the back nine starts, which starts Paige Pierce's day. She starts with a double bogey to Kristen Tatar's birdie. And Kristen Tatar went birdie, birdie, birdie to start. Paige Pierce went double bogey, birdie, bogey to start. So lost a lot of strokes. All of her momentum stopped. She went on to lose by 16 strokes overall.
16.
So she was in the lead going into the last 27 holes, lost by 11 in the final round, I believe it ended up being. Yeah, 11 in the final round. Ended up losing the tournament by 16 strokes. So the tweet I sent out, there was a poll, was if the weather delay didn't happen, does Paige Pierce win the event?
Mm.
when you just look at the final score and see she lost by 16, that sounds like a pretty crazy take.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Probably still was a crazy take, but my whole thought on it, I don't think she would have won. I think it would have been a lot closer. But my whole thought was she had a bunch of momentum. She had overtaken the lead. She was now clear of Kristen by a few strokes, and she was going into the back nine. There's no telling what that back nine would have looked like if that round continued with her momentum, with her flow.
Mm-hmm.
That back nine being paused and change, and you know, being pushed to the next day, fully changed this event. I'd actually be curious, in round two, is there a way? No, they don't. Man, I wish you could like go back and see the win probability through round two. Like, they don't have it really updating. Because there's a point where obviously Paige Pierce is in the lead and they don't have it on here. Because I'm curious, like, oh, let me actually, if I add Paige Pierce to this chart, this will probably help. Okay, so even when Paige Pierce had the lead on Saturday, the highest her win percentage chance on UDisc ever got was 35%. And she did have a two-stroke lead. So she was 10 under. Kristen Tatar was 8 under. And then by the end of it all, obviously Kristen Tatar won by 16.
I have a question.
But it was a crazy sequence that led to that.
I haven't seen the course. Was the back nine significantly harder than the front nine?
It was less scorable, but I wouldn't say significant. I think the big drastic difference was the wind was picking up on Saturday, but it wasn't like crazy. It was just, there was like a tornado watch coming in. So that's why they ended up suspending play and canceling it. Sunday, it was like crazy windy. Even at 6:30 in the morning, they were dealing with like 20 some miles an hour.
Looking at the scorecards all next to each other, it's a pretty stark difference between the front nine and back nine.
Yeah. If you look at
pretty much across the board, everybody, except for Kristen Tatar.
If you look at round one, you can see like the back nine definitely played harder. Like there were some bigger scores, but it was pretty. It looked like a pretty normal scorecard.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Kristen, for instance, I think shot the same score on the front and back round one.
Mm.
She went 1, 2, 3, 2, 3, 4 under on the front and 1, 2, 3 under on the back. So that was round one. Round two, it obviously the split happened. Kristen came out, lit up the back nine. She was only 1 under on the front, lit up the back nine, whereas Paige Pierce really struggled on the back. And then the final round, Kristen Tatar popped off 6 under with some pretty, like, she had 3 OB strokes early and was having to hit some crazy putts to save herself. Ended up running away with the thing, won by 6 strokes. But I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting storyline that isn't going to get very much attention because Paige lost by so much.
Yeah.
It would have been interesting to see what would have happened if the extra 9 would have been able to play on Saturday. But when it's all said and done, Kristen Tatar is continuing to put on one of the most dominant seasons we've ever seen. I think the only season in my memory that compares, and I think the edge goes to this other season, the only season in my memory that compares is Paul in 2015. I think the edge goes to Paul in 2015, mainly because the dude didn't finish outside the top 3.
Yeah.
But this is the resume Kristen Tatar has built up so far. She has, I'm going to just go through tournament by tournament and just read it out. She won Waco, first place at Waco, 5th place at the Open at Austin, 2nd place at Texas States, wins Music City, wins Blue Ridge Championship, wins a major at Champions Cup, 6th place at Jonesboro, wins Portland Open, wins Zootown Open, 4th place at DDO, wins True Bank Des Moines Challenge. Goodness. If you're not keeping up, that's 7 wins and 11 starts.
Wow.
With 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them being at an elite plus or being in an elite or a major event, 2 of them being silver events.
Wow.
So you could pause the season right there. She could not play the rest of the year. She's going to be a tough candidate to beat for player of the year with the season she already has.
Mm-hmm.
Insane start to her season. No one's even coming close to her. If she, again, we're about halfway into the season, maybe like a tournament past halfway, but we're about halfway into the season. If she didn't play another event the rest of the year, she would be at 4th place in last year's standings for the end of the year.
Wow.
That's how, like, she would have beaten out Owen Scoggins for top 4. She is currently in the Pro Tour standings. Let me open this in a new tab. I believe it's like 200 points clear of 2nd place I'll verify that. Yeah, she has 933 points so far this year. Missy Gannon's in second at 719. Where the frick's Paige Pierce on this list? There she is, 16th. Oh my gosh. I guess Paige just isn't playing that much and kind of sucking when she does play. Paige Pierce has won the OTB Open and she won the Open at Austin. So Paige has two wins, but she has two outside the top 25, one fifth place and one 16th place, and that's it pretty much. And so she's in 16th place right now. The top 20 make the tour finale. So she's only 30 points clear of making the tour finale. We'll take a closer look at this in a little bit, because that's one thing I want to dig into is the points on MPO and FPO. But all that to say, Kristen Tatar, head and shoulders above the field. And you could see it out there. She was making mistakes. And what was funny is in her post-round interview, Brian Earhart asked her something about the mistakes. And she was like, well, to be honest with you, like the mistakes, I was getting very angry at myself. And so after I'd make a mistake, I'd be really angry. And that's kind of what was giving me the pop to make those putts. And so she was like taking her anger and her pressure she's put on herself, and it forces her to play better.
I got to learn how to do that.
Whereas a lot of other players, it does the opposite. I also sent this tweet out because I found it funny. Paige Pierce, the Pro Tour, tweeted out a clip of her pre-tournament saying, you know, she was talking about like the competition and how it's changing all this, but she was like, you know, I'm kind of like, I'm ready to just pop off a few hot rounds. Like I'm done messing around was the quote.
Mm.
I forget how she got there, but basically like, I'm done messing around this season.
Mm.
Come hole five of the final round, I think it was, or whatever the hole that it's like over the water with the elevated basket. They have the hive, they call it. Of like the fans. Come that hole, she walks up to the tee and like has the fans choose which disc she should throw. She's like, which disc should I throw? And they choose one, she throws it in the water. And so I tweeted, I said, Paige Pierce on Thursday, I'm done messing around. Paige Pierce on Sunday, which disc should I throw? And it was a very funny moment, because at that point she was not out of it by any means yet, but it was starting to feel that way. By that point, because she again had lost all momentum. At that point, she was maybe seven strokes out, which we've seen people collapse worse. Kristen typically doesn't, but we've seen it. It wasn't exactly a time and place to be like, hey, which dish should I throw? And then she threw it in the water. So I thought that was very funny. But on the MPO side, it was a dogfight out there. Gannon Burr picks up his second elite win of the year, his third win, I believe, overall. He won the Open at Austin earlier. He ended up winning by three, but it was much closer than that all round. Isaac Robinson was, I believe, the card ahead of him. And he double bogeyed the final hole to Gannon's birdie, which that ended up being the difference for Isaac coming in second. Mm. It looked like at one point that Isaac Robinson's brother, Ezra Robinson, was going to run away with the thing.
Mm.
Then he slowed up. And then Calvin was in the mix, but really just had a few too many OB strokes and a few mistakes, we'll call them, down the stretch when Gannon wasn't making them. It was a pretty electric finish coming down the stretch there. Also, I found it very funny. So Gannon, the final hole was playing pretty tough, especially in the wind. It was a pretty long par five. And Gannon put himself to like 40-ish feet for his birdie putt. Mm-hmm. Again, if he makes that, he wins by three, but he could lay up and win by two. No one can catch him on the card.
Mm-hmm.
And he's walking up and he's literally getting the crowd pumped up as he's walking up to his putt, and then just stepped up and banged a 40 footer for the win.
Oh my
gosh. No reason. No reason. I was watching it and like it wasn't a risky putt because there's a lot of room around it. Had it like somehow missed and rolled OB, yeah, it could have been.
I would happily bet a lot of money on him making that though after getting a crowd riled up. Well, like,
that's just the difference. Cause like if you get me up there and I get a crowd riled up and I have that putt. Not
but him,
close.
he's like, that just makes sense.
He hadn't even like, let me look at his circle two putting percentage, because I don't even think he was putting that good from circle two. He was 50% C2. But at that point, he was 33% C2 because he had missed two and made one. And yeah, 38 footer. And he just like got him pumped and just ignored the like typical tournament etiquette of like lay up, let everyone else tap out, and then you tap out for your ceremonial win. He just walked up, got the crowd hyped, and just banged it.
That's awesome.
It was electric.
He's such like a good personality to have in this game. Like, I think it's so great having him.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then Greg Barsby, he was on lead card. You know, last year we saw him, I believe, because he won the Sula Open last year, mm-hmm. which this year is a full lead event. I don't think it was last year. I think it was just like a silver event last year. But he's getting hot kind of at the right time because we're about to go over to Europe. He's had success at the European Open before. I think he's coming second at that event.
Mm-hmm.
And this year's World Championship is in Vermont, the home of where Barsby won his back in 2018.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if Barsby's going to get hot, this is the time for Barsby to get hot. Go to Europe, maybe pick up a win, and then who knows what could happen at Worlds. Worlds is going to be very, very interesting because I think Worlds plays very much to Chris Dickerson's strength. Being out there, Greg Barsby's obviously won it there. Isaac Robinson tends to play good at courses you think Chris Dickerson's going to play good at, so Isaac Robinson has a good chance. Obviously, Calvin and Gannon are always going to play good and be in the mix. Ricky has won GMC very many times, so or at least put himself in contention a lot of times, so he's also going to be a favorite going in, and then it's Worlds, so that puts Paul in the mix. It's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be very interesting to see if Paul can keep up his streak of winning or coming in second. Because it's getting tougher and tougher and tougher to do. And I feel like this year, the courses line up to a lot of players' games. And Paul has been kind of struggling this year. I mean, this weekend, he played over at the Crokul Open. And this young, up-and-coming European player named Bradley Williams beat him. Bradley Williams went over there and beat Paul by one. Paul came in second.
Dang.
Which Bradley Williams is a very, very solid player. So this isn't like a knock on what Paul's been doing, but Paul has not had
the
success.
Not someone he's lost to a lot in the past.
Yeah. You Paul know? Has not had the success in Europe that I expected him to have. So I mean Bradley Williams' season this year leaves a lot to be desired, to be honest with you. 49th Vegas. Some glimmers. He got second at the Blue Ridge Championship, 10th at Waco. But he's finished outside the top 30 like three or four times over here and then goes over and wins over there. Now, obviously, that doesn't really say much because, I mean, we saw Parker Welk win last weekend and he missed cash this weekend. So players have ebbs and flows, ups and downs. But I thought that was an interesting one. But going into Worlds, which Worlds is in like 2 months, I think. I think it's in August. It'll be very interesting to see what happens. We have another major coming up in between those two, but very exciting stuff. I think so. This is an interesting tournament too, because obviously with the weather delay on MPO's side, FPO got their three rounds in. MPO only got two rounds in. Historically, when a round gets canceled, we feel like it's not a true win. But what I found this weekend was I think I only feel like that if it's not a proven winner. Because you had Gavin Babcock in the mix. You had Ezra Robinson coming up. Both of them, it would have been kind of sad if they won. It would have been very exciting if they won because it would have been big wins, big moments for their career. Also a big paycheck. But it would have been a little sad because it's like they'll always have like kind of that asterisk. Like Big Germ's USDGC win.
Yeah.
Big Germ has said it multiple times like he didn't want to win that way. He wanted the final round because you don't want to have that question on from like a fan perspective or on yourself. You don't want to be like, well, could I have done it if there was three rounds? When it's a proven winner like Gannon Burr, I don't find myself having that feeling. Like, because he's proven he can win and then he did what was in front of him. It's probably like the same feeling you should have with anyone because especially in this case, they knew this round was the final round when it started. It wasn't a surprise.
That's the difference right there.
Because that's true, because when Big Germ won USDGC, the final round got canceled.
Yeah.
And so the third round happened, and they thought there was going to be a fourth round. Yeah. Final round got canceled.
Which I think is way different.
That is a different scenario to be in, because this scenario, you do have to go into the round and...
You're playing it with final round mojo.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But it is something to be said of doing it across two rounds versus three rounds. But I just found it weird that like I was watching it, and when Gannon won, not an ounce of me questioned his win. But like a few weeks ago, this happened. I believe it was Evan Smith won a silver event and one of the rounds got canceled. So it was a two round. And I was like, man, a silver event plus two rounds. Like, that's kind of tough.
Yeah.
I would love to have that win. So like take it with a grain of salt because I would love to be in those shoes. But it's a weird win of like when one's canceled. But I didn't find myself having that feeling with an experienced winner. So I don't know. It was just looking in my mind.
It
I found it
out
weird.
Three rounds really weans out a lot of people.
Well, yeah, because if you look at the leaderboard, like let's say that this was like this, there was one more round to play. What did I just do?
I mean, even right here with having two rounds, the people in third place are not the people I would expect to be in third place.
Yeah, so your lead card for the final round would have been Gannon Burr, Isaac Robinson, Greg Barsby, and Calvin Heimberg, with Ezra Robinson, Gavin Babcock, AB, and Simon Lizotte being the chase card. And Gannon would have had a three-stroke lead going into the final round. I feel like Gannon with a three-stroke lead probably going to win, but Isaac Robinson I think would have had a good shot at it, and Calvin Heimberg I think would have had a good shot. Greg Barsby, who knows? The dude is very experienced on tour. I think that someone might have had to slip up a little bit for Barsby to get in there to win.
Well, let's be honest. All those other guys are young guys. Like, they've got more stamina.
Barsby's spry, man.
He is spry.
He'll make his putts, and like he was doing the typical Barsby run where like he makes the putt and he like
bounces. I'm not for a second saying that he's not in shape, but you can't really, no matter like.
No, the stamina is a play.
Is a teenager.
Yeah.
Is he still a teenager?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know. It was an interesting tournament. And the other thing I wanted to highlight as we wrap this tournament up, two more things. First, I wanted to actually take a look at Ezra Robinson's season. His brother, Isaac Robinson, obviously has won a major. He's put himself in contention multiple times. Arguably the best player in the world. I don't think so, but he's starting to be able to formulate an argument for himself. His name is in the same, like Gannon Burr, Calvin Heimberg, Isaac Robinson are the three this year. Would not have predicted that after last year. But his brother starting to have a sneaky season. His worst finish this year is 59th at Music City. Okay, whatever. Every other finish is in, unless I'm missing something, every other finish is inside the top 30. That starts to get impressive.
Yeah.
And then recently, start at Jonesboro. He went 15th at Jonesboro, 22nd Portland Open, 8th at Zootown, 6th at DDO, 3rd at Des Moines.
6th at DDO is, and he's just going up.
Yeah, and 3rd at Des Moines. These are pretty stacked fields. The only person missing in the Des Moines Challenge and even like the Portland Open, the only person missing is Paul. And so he's beating out like Ricky, Calvin, stuff like that. Like, he obviously not Calvin, I don't think DDO, but he's up there in the mix consistently. And his season's getting a little overshadowed simply because his brother is having a much better season. But he's 17th in the Pro Tour standings right now. And I don't feel like we've really heard much about him this year, because I think if you're talking about Robinson, you're talking about Isaac.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you know what? I think a lot of people have had arguments of like who are the best sibling duos. And there's been a lot of arguments for like the Sexton brothers. I believe Nate Sexton has a brother. Yuli's brother. There's been a lot of arguments like that. The Robinson brothers, I think, might be the best ones.
For sure, yeah.
I mean, especially they're both young guys. Ezra's a little older, I believe, than Isaac, but they're both top 20 players in the world right now. Isaac Robinson, I think, is third in the world, and you have Ezra in 17th in the Pro Tour standings. Pretty insane.
Also, you know who is having an incredible season right now? Prodigy.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I sent that tweet out yesterday because the podium consisted of, what was it, five people or six people technically? But one, two, three, four, six people. But three of those six people were Prodigy sponsored.
Yeah.
You had Gannon in first, Isaac in second, and then Ezra in third. I don't know if it's sheer luck that has led them here, or if they have someone on their staff that is like one of the best talent scouts in the sport.
They've got to be, because it seems like every time like there's like a person that becomes really prominent, they were with Prodigy at one point or they are with Prodigy. Like, I feel like every like good like player who grows up to be a great player was with Prodigy at one point.
Now, is that because Prodigy signed a lot of people?
Yeah, I mean, that's because probably 80% of the field was with Prodigy at one point.
But, I mean, they even have Alden Harris right now, and he's popped off quite a bit. Like, they have a young core that is their future, assuming they keep everyone, basically impossible to do.
Yeah.
But assuming they were able to keep everyone they have, they have the best team 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Assuming they keep everyone.
Yeah. And well, also, I feel like the way it used to be with Prodigy was like, other than Will Schustrick, who obviously is an exception, he's a winner. But like, they didn't have a ton of people who won on Prodigy, but they always produced people who won a lot after they were gone from Prodigy because they signed so many people.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, they got winners on their team. They got people who are like placing well. It's great for them. Because it shows that you can win with Prodigy.
Well, we started this season and Prodigy's name was being drugged through the mud.
Yeah.
We had the lawsuit going on. Mm-hmm. Part of the lawsuit was attacking the quality of their plastic. And now, and like immediately people were like coming after Prodigy, whatever. Nowadays, I mean, it's hard to come after Prodigy because
I don't really hear anyone talk about Prodigy at all. I think it's part of it being neutralized.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like they started the year, you were thinking like, could this be the end of Prodigy? Like, you know, I always took the stance of like, I think that Prodigy's probably a little more in the right, actually a lot more in the right than the public perception had them, mm-hmm. but a little more in the right than most people thought. In that whole lawsuit thing, it was just like unfortunate that it happened to one of the most beloved guys on tour,
yeah.
in the way that it went down. But it seemed like Prodigy had the legal backing. It seemed like they were in the right from my outside point of view. Then the settlement happens. Gannon Burr has himself an incredible season so far. Isaac Robinson comes up out of nowhere having an incredible season. Alden Harris is, A, his vlogs are going off. He's also having a good season. Mm. Ezra Robinson stepping in and having a good season. I'm sure I'm forgetting players, but I mean, Kevin Jones even had a few good finishes. Caroline Henderson, that was a pickup too. They're like just having themselves a very solid season, and I feel like the shift is kind of happening. Like the public mm-hmm. perception is, like you said, it's now neutralized. You don't yeah. really see people tearing Prodigy apart anymore. And like Prodigy snuck his way into my bag,
yeah.
like out of nowhere. I'm like throwing stuff, and I'm like, you know, that's a really good disc. I think I'm gonna put it in.
They have to have quite the team over there.
Yeah,
I'm very impressed.
It's been an impressive year. It is not the way I think anyone thought Prodigy's year was going to go.
Yeah,
Prodigy will likely, I think it's safe to say at this point, Prodigy will end up being more popular at the end of this year than the beginning of this year. And had you said that a few months ago,
yeah.
everyone would have been like, you're an idiot. There's no shot.
That's crazy.
But it is what it is. Drew Gibson sent this tweet out. You know, whenever a sentence starts with that, this yeah. is going to be a good thing. But this one, he was kind of poking a bear, but he seemed like he didn't want to have a foot in the race, or however you want to put it, a horse in the race. But anyways, he said $12,250 for first in both MPO and FPO this week. 120 players, that's the MPO field. 46 players, that's the FPO field. Division quote-unquote value, 71,717 MPO. Division quote-unquote value, $39,816 FPO. 221% entry fee payout MPO. 321% entry fee payout FPO. That's the tweet. So essentially what he was highlighting is twofold. A, that FPO and MPO both got $12,250 for first place. And the division value percentage-wise was 100% more FPO, 321% to 221%. Now, the bottom line, the 221%, 321%, that's not misleading at all. That's true, and that's mm-hmm. true of most Pro Tours. And, you know, we've talked about this before. I think it's been a while since I talked about it, but essentially, I think some people overlook it. Some people are upset by it. Some people are okay with it. How I view it is the FPO field is noticeably smaller, mm-hmm. noticeably less dense. You have a player able to dominate it. They're a few years behind MPO. And how I view it is, right now, the top guys on tour, most players on tour, they're not making their living off of payout. And so I think this is a conscious decision by the Pro Tour with the end goal of growing FPO. Because essentially what's happening is the ad cash is coming in. More of it percentage-wise is being distributed to FPO than MPO. And the other thing they're trying to do is make the FPO wage on tour sustainable. Mm. Because if you're a middle-of-the-road FPO player, you're playing in a smaller field, your sponsorship's not going to be as big in general because there's not as many eyes on the FPO as there is the MPO side.
Yeah.
And if you're coming in 25th in FPO is like the cash line. 25th in MPO is a great finish.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's harder to do 25th in MPO because there's 120 players versus 46. But it's trying to kind of grow something, and so they're putting money towards it to grow it. Whether that's right or not, that's for you at home to decide. Because
I feel like it's definitely not typical
for a sport. Yes and no. Because like for instance, the WNBA...
Uh-huh.
A lot of the like money and stuff to fund the WNBA comes through the NBA. The NBA owns the WNBA, and it's like a thing to, again, you're trying to grow the women's side of the sport.
Yeah.
And so the money kind of funnels through the men's side. Now it's at a much, when things are at this low of a scale that we're dealing with in disc golf,
yeah,
it's a little bit more glaring because if the winner Or if the field, if this division was 7.1 million and 3.9 million instead of 71,000 and 39,000, yeah, no one's batting an eye.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, so do we want, does it really matter if the MPO field gets, you know, another million dollars for the purse? Who cares? You're getting so much money. When it's brought down this low, it's a little more glaring. So I think that, like, it's just something that has been going on for a while. And I think it's an intentional thing by the Pro Tour, again, I think, to try to grow FPO. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with it or right with it. I personally, like, it's a weird line because, again, you're trying to sustain both tours. And you have to think, if the Pro Tour was to evenly distribute the added cash based on the amount of players that are in, so both of these said 221% or both said 270% entry fee payout. So basically 50% of the money was going back to MPO, or whatever, however that math would add up. Then you'd have to start questioning, like, would the FPO tour have as many players on tour? And, you know, I think the goal is to eventually, this is just me from the outside looking in, the goal is to eventually have the FPO tour be big enough and strong enough that it can split, and you can have the DGPT and the LDGPT. And then you have the ladies pro tour and the men's pro tour, well, the mixed pro tour and the ladies pro tour. That I think would be like kind of the end goal eventually. But to get there, you have to grow the FPO side and grow the interest in the FPO side enough. And I think this is one of the way the pro tour is doing it. Now, why I said the top line, the 12,200 to first in both FPO and MPO is, I don't want to say inaccurate, but kind of inaccurate or misleading is how I put it. Let me pull up the projected payout here because I found this interesting. And let me just pull up Drew Gibson, actually. He'll probably be the easiest way to get to. I found this interesting because I feel like if I was in FPO, I'd be happy, obviously, that the first place is getting the same as MPO. But I don't think I'd be happy with the way that it happened. So MPO, you have 12,250 to first, 7,500 to second, 4,750 to third, right? Pretty standard drop off. You know, first to second, you lose $5,000.
Yeah.
Pretty severe. FPO, you have 12,250 to first, then you drop to 4,500 to second, then 2,500 to third. First to second is $8,000, basically.
That feels to me, this is an assumption. I'm about to make an assumption.
Yeah.
Just a heads up. But that feels to me like I'm not going to say they were more worried about that because that sounds like I'm assuming that they're bad people. But seems like what they were really caring about was making it look like the payout was the same by first place getting the same amount. But then that just meant that they had to give percentage-wise way less to the other finishers like in FPO.
Yeah.
So it seems like they really cared about, like, you know, it's going to look really good if we pay the FPO the same amount as the MPO for the winner. But I don't know. Does that make sense to percentage, to like proportionally make it that different? Like,
no.
That doesn't seem right to me.
I haven't listened to The Upshot. It's another disc golf podcast, but someone tweeted this, responded to Drew, and said The Upshot had the TD on this week, and he said that TrueBank, which is the main sponsor, had a condition that first place for both divisions got the same payout.
So I was right.
But yeah, so that's exactly what you were saying. So essentially, Chris Natar had a great day.
Yeah.
Missy Gannon should probably be a little upset.
But that just means that you're hurting everyone else in the field by doing that. Like,
it's a virtue signaling or whatever. Yeah, where it's like, look at the big advertising, big headline is first place got the same.
Yeah.
But MPO, it's like first place got what they were going to get no matter what. Mm-hmm. FPO, first place got the same at the cost of the rest of the field.
Yeah.
I don't love that.
It's a publicity stunt.
But what ends up happening is
kind of dirty.
Money comes in from sponsors. There is a set percentage that, like, for each tier, a set amount of added cash that has to be distributed evenly based on players. Beyond that, it's up to basically the tournament director or sponsors or whoever. Like, for instance, we saw, it's been a few years ago, or it might have been last year, but we saw, I believe it was a vodka company, but they specifically donated like $10,000 or something to the FPO purse only. And so the tournament looked crazy because the FPO field was like 25, but had like twice the added cash. But it was because a sponsor came in and said, this money is specifically for FPO. So that's kind of why things can happen like this, that kind of like look weird, is because once you reach that certain amount, everything beyond that is fair game. You can kind of pick and choose how you want to do it. Drew Gibson, I think you can kind of tell where Drew Gibson stood by him tweeting this. Someone said, unless added cash is donated directly to be for FPO, the distribution of money is ridiculously unfair. And then Drew responded and said, just imagine for 10 seconds if someone donated $50K to be used for MPO only. Can you imagine the uproar? So there you have it.
I understand his point there, but I think the difference is that it would feel more unfair if they were like equal popularity and equal pay there. But it seems like more like you're just adding to the one to try to grow one. It doesn't. Yeah. It doesn't make you seem like a bad person if you just donate money to FPO, because it feels like you're trying to grow the FPO side.
Yeah,
that's why it would be bad if you just donated it to the MPO, because they don't need help growing. I mean, they do, but you know what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Like I don't think he made it seem like that's a lot worse than it actually.
Yeah.
Is,
well, that's at the end of the day. His statement's right. Like, yeah, there would be an uproar.
Yes, there would be. But I don't think it's just because it's MPO.
The thing at the end of the day, I think, is, again, you can choose how you feel about money being distributed the way it is. But the Pro Tour is trying to grow the FPO side. And again, I think that one of the ways they're doing it is making the pots look a little better, making it be a little bigger. Because at the end of the day, let's be realistic here. If Gannon Burr, instead of winning $12,000, won $15,000, is that making anyone at home who is on the fence about going on tour, is that a deal breaker for him? Where they're sitting at home, they're thinking, I could go on tour, can I make it, whatever, and an additional few thousand went to the winner? Mm. Probably not.
No.
Whereas for FPO, if you go from, and we won't use the winner in this case because, again, we just showed how that's disproportionate, but the winner probably would have gotten close to $7,000 or $8,000.
Yeah.
If the winner got 8,000 versus like 4,000 or 5,000,
yeah,
that's a bigger jump to where you are a little bit more likely if you're, you know, an FPO, good FPO local pro, and you're looking at, hey, third place got $2,500.
Yeah, I can go make a payday.
Yeah.
Or I can pay for my trip.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's kind of where I think their mindset is. Whether you like it or not, that's up to you. But I thought it was interesting that Drew Gibson brought attention to that, because that is something that I think slides under the radar, is that's kind of what's going on right now. And I think that's the intention behind it. But it is interesting. I don't like that basically both first places got the same amount, just at the sake of first place got the same amount.
Yeah, it's very obviously just to look good. And yeah, I don't think that,
because I think it realistically, cool. Like, yeah, it's great that Christian Tatar got $12,000, but the rest of the field could use that money a little more.
Yeah.
And it's one thing if the percentage jump was the same, but dropping $8,000 first to second,
exactly, yeah,
that's kind of ludicrous.
They just made it so obvious that...
Yeah, it was like we took a bunch of money from everyone else and put it to first.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'm all for bigger first place pay. I'm all for a more like cutthroat, top heavy pay. But it's got to be
for the wrong reason.
Well, it happened only one field.
Yeah.
Because like if you're gonna be cutthroat, then be cutthroat on MPO.
Yeah.
And then MPO make MPO, you know, Gannon Burr gets 17,000 and second place got 10 or something, whatever it may be. However the breakdown would have been. But you're only doing it to one because you're just like, oh, we need this front.
Yeah.
I didn't like that.
If anything, it discourages people because they're like, oh, I have to win.
I have to win.
Make actual money.
Yeah. But people probably aren't looking that deep into it, because if you're just on the outside and you don't dig in, then... Right.
But if you are a female disc golfer and you want to go try to like participate on tour, then you're probably not looking at what is first place getting, because if you're not even sure you're going to go on tour anyway, you're probably not.
You're probably like, what can I get for 10th place?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what's more likely to convince them.
Interesting
so
stuff.
But that kind of goes against what the DGPT's
are. I would agree. But it seems like it came from the outside sponsor.
Yeah,
I don't think that's their fault.
That's yeah.
All right.
It's completely okay. Yeah.
We're going to hop into a fan favorite segment, Trevor's Trivia. And you might be like, Hunter, Trevor's not here. You're right. So instead, I'm doing trivia about Trevor. I'm going to Trevor's Trivia about Trevor. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go into Trevor's Instagram, and I'm going to read you, Connor, and you at home, because you can guess, a caption from Trevor's Instagram. I'm going to pick a bunch of different styles of pictures. So each picture is going to have Trevor doing something different. And you have to guess what is the picture is of.
Okay.
We'll just see how this goes to see if I need to change the rules. I'm gonna try to make them not so obvious.
I don't think that
a lot of Trevor's are very obvious with what he captions, but sometimes he won't.
Sometimes I feel like he'd go kind of the ironic route.
So this one says, "For the love of the sport," with three snowflake emojis.
It's whenever you guys did the grit series.
No, it's him wearing his Gannon Burr t-shirt.
Dang.
That was a good guess though.
Dang. That was a good guess.
Okay, I'm not gonna say no. I can't. That one's too obvious. Here we go. Just a couple of frisbee guys doing frisbee guy stuff.
Dang. Can I get a year?
This is from December 17th, 2022.
Okay, so fairly recent. Was that whenever we were in the rain?
I'm not answering any questions. Gosh. Just a couple of frisbee guys doing frisbee guy stuff.
I'm going to guess it's some kind of picture like in the warehouse or... can I say where, like in the business, like warehouse yeah. or office? It was
okay.
It was one. Is a picture like that?
It is not. It's him at home, him and his son looking through frisbees.
Oh.
let me see here. Football guys.
Is that the Super Bowl?
It is not. It's just him and his son at a football game. This is fun.
Sick, Trev.
Let's see. Always good to be back in my beloved Pennsylvania, Blue Heart. The cornfields here just hit different.
There's nothing wrong. I wasn't laughing because there's anything wrong with that. It just wasn't what I was expecting. That's not a stupid. He's not gonna ever see.
He's
this.
Never watching this. No. So you can say whatever you want about him.
I'm guessing it's like a scenic picture, like of scenery.
Okay.
What am I supposed to get? Like, is that like I'm just guessing?
You can guess as broad or specific as you want.
I think the picture is like a sunset picture.
Incorrect. It's me and him just staying on a disc golf course in Pennsylvania. All right, last one here.
I know what Trevor's very first post is.
I'm not going to his very first.
His very first post is a like a scenic picture of some scenery.
All right, this one just says tourism in a, like, italic font.
It's at the beach.
It is not. It's us in front of our yellow renegade in Texas.
I sucked at this game.
Hey, that's Trevor's trivia. Yeah. Hopefully, you got to know Trevor a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, yellow renegade.
Look inside his mind there. That was very hard. That was a hard game.
That was difficult.
We're going to do a little mid-season Disc Golf Pro Tour points check-in.
Hit him,
This will be kind of quick. More so, I just want to read who's at the top and who's on the cut lines that you know kind of what to look for going into the last event. So, on FPO, the top 20 qualify for the Tour Championship. The top three currently is Kristen Tatar at 933 points, Missy Gannon at 719 points, and then Ella Hansen at 690 points. Missing from that list, Kat Allen and Paige Pierce. The bottom of the list, we have Lisa Fakus in 20th with 400 points. Then you have Stacey Ronsley in 19th at 425.33, and Deanne Carey's in 18th at 425.83. Paige Pierce, just a little bit ahead of them, in 16th with 431 points. Jen Allen is currently the first one out at 398 points, and then you have Holly Finley right behind her at 393 points. Beyond that, I think it would take someone winning to kind of get in. So that's kind of what you're looking at there. As far as FPO goes, on MPO, the top, I believe it's 32. It's loading. Top 32 qualifier tour championship. Right now, first, second, and third goes Calvin Heimberg at 828 points. Gannon Burr in second at 710 points. Isaac Robinson in third at 670 points. I'm going to just read the top five because this is fascinating. Anthony Barella in fourth, and then James Proctor in fifth.
Wow.
You have to scroll pretty far to find some names you would have expected. Paul McBeth's in 15th, and then Ricky Wysocki's in 23rd.
Wow.
So the bottom of the field here.
He's been out a good bit.
Ricky's been out, yeah. Bottom of the field here, we have Brody Smith officially is in. He's in 30th right now at 251 points. Right behind him, you have Chris Clemens in 31st at 249 points. And then behind him, Robert Burrage is on the cut line at 245 points in 32nd. The next three, you have Double G at 240 points in 33rd, Yakub Cimarod at 239 points at 34th, and then Austin Turner at 233 points at 35th. Some notable names that are currently outside the cut line: Nico LeCastro sitting in 37th, Drew Gibson sitting in 43rd, Andrew Marweed's in 48th. Let's see here, Paul Ulibarri's in 55th. Any other? Greg Barsby's in 62nd, Connor O'Reilly 63rd, Nate Sexton 64th, which Nate Sexton hasn't really played that much. Jeremy Colling 68th, Austin Hanum 70th. Jeez, Colton Montgomery, 75th. I think that's Chandler Fry's 83rd. I think it's about where notable names end. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting tour championship. A lot of new names that are going to make it this year, it looks like. Again, we're about halfway, so a lot of things could change. We're going to update our power rankings next week once Trevor's back. To round out the episode, I'm going to just read this quick post from Sun King Discs, and then we're going to end it with a little question, if you will. So there's apparently, I found out about this last night, there's apparently a lawsuit going down against the Paul McBeth and Dylan Cease company that owns the Throwdown the Mountain course. There's not a ton of information out there right now, but Sun King Discs posted this on their Facebook. This is kind of what made it publicly known. The Sun King's Discs posted, the Grand Canyon course in Brooksville is closed until farther notice. That's the Throwdown the Mountain course. Closed until farther notice. Below is a letter that was sent to all players from the Independence Day Clash. It is with quite an enormous amount of frustration I need to inform everyone that Sun King / Millennium presents Independence Day Clash X is being, which I think it's 10, is being forced to relocate the event away from the Grand Canyon / Throwdown the Mountain course. The nature of the forced relocation is due to a pending lawsuit against Mick Cease LLC, which is the corporate entity that Paul McBeth and Dylan Cease formed to purchase the property in early March 2023. Most of you are aware how much effort it took to save the Grand Canyon course from being snagged up by a developer and subsequently sold to Paul and Dylan instead in the attempt to preserve the course for all future generations of disc golfers. The pending lawsuit has now suspended all future play at the course until the lawsuit is resolved. The lawsuit was filed by a competitor at Throwdown the Mountain 11, I believe, who has refused to operate through proper insurance channels provided by the PDGA. Lastly, with my 20-plus years of promoting disc golf at every level, it is in my opinion that this lawsuit is not only frivolous, but as I just mentioned, might even purposely design to stall or even completely prohibit the Grand Canyon from becoming a permanent course. This means that not only is Throwdown the Mountain 12 in 2024 in jeopardy of not taking place, but so are all future events, including any plans to the Pro Tour, DG1, or any other tournament partners. I'm very serious when I say that if this lawsuit is successful at any level, it will have a massive negative implications for our entire sport at all levels, with one of the main purposes of the event being to outline our rights as citizens of the United States. This is the Independence Clash. With one of the main purposes of the event being to outline our rights as citizens for the United States as put forth by the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, we are going to live by the motto of pursuing happiness, and we plan on still having the amazing event and experience for our players. I hope that most players will see this relocation for what it is, just a disappointment, but will stick with us in a show of solidarity against the selfishness of the lawsuit. If you have any questions, let me know, but for right now, I won't be answering any specific questions about the pending lawsuit via email or text. Michael Barnett, Tournament Director. So, not a ton of information out there, like I said. It seems as though from reading comments that someone, I believe it's the owner of a local shop down there. Mm-hmm. I won't blast a local shop's name out here because I don't feel like that's the right thing to do. But it seems like an owner of a local shop, not Sun King Discs, but another local shop down there, played in Throwdown the Mountain, got hurt in some capacity. One of the comments mentioned possibly being hit by a disc. I don't have anywhere to verify that. But some type of capacity, this person got injured during Throwdown the Mountain, and it seems instead of filing through the insurance, they are just straight suing.
Wow.
Paul and Dylan's company. That's what it seems via this post and Facebook comments. I'm sure UltiWorld and discgolf.law will pick up this story and have more information.
Mm-hmm.
Very confusing, but it's a very interesting situation that's going down. Because obviously Paul and Dylan bought up this property, like he said in this post, with the intent of saving it because it was going to be developed. Paul's always loved Throwdown the Mountain, and I think they saw it as a good business opportunity, a good opportunity to grow the sport down in Florida. And it's unfortunate that this is going on now. So we'll keep that up to date.
That's crazy.
I don't know what the lawsuit, like how much it's for. I think it was on a comment or someone might have DM'd me that it was like for $50,000. But I'm not positive that's true or not. I don't really have much information beyond what I just read you. So we'll try to keep you up to date as we have with every other disc golf lawsuit. But I just found that one interesting because this is apparently just the year of disc golf lawsuits. So this is the first one that I think has a implication to even you sitting at home because, I can't say this is the first one because some of the other ones might have as well. But this one, like as a tournament director, you know, it's kind of terrifying because you have insurance through the PDGA a lot of times, or if you go and get insurance on your own and like everyone signs the waiver when they sign up, literally most of the time it's a checkbox on Disc Golf Scene waivers a lot of times can or can't hold up. It depends, but a lot of times they end up not being able to hold up. But, you know, you do all that you can in providing what feels like a good event for the community. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes things happen and people have alternative, I don't know what that word is, but motives. And again, I'm not going to paint this person who's filing a lawsuit in a bad light because we don't have any details. So that's why I'm not mentioning their shop they own or even who they are, because for all I know, they're in the right. I have no idea. I just have this one post from Sun King who's obviously upset because the course down there is in jeopardy and they're having to move their event. So I don't know all the details, but I did find it interesting. And we're going to round out the show on a little bit more of a positive note by giving our most underrated disc in the game.
Well, first of all, that's the everything you just said is the reason why there shouldn't be a Pro Tour event at De La.
That's fair.
Because I don't know. Fair. I don't know how people don't die out there on that course. Yeah, it seems like every single. It felt like half the tee pads.
I've never been on grip lock since De La.
We didn't really talk about it very much, but it feels like half the tee pads were in the fairway of another hole.
De La was,
and you were always in the war zone for the over like a top of the world shot.
Yeah,
top of world shot can go anywhere, and there's like literally four holes that you're throwing in on whenever you.
Yeah, the top of world so. Shot. De La was exactly how I expected. I had a great time playing it. It was a ton of fun. I did not get De La'd. I thought I was going to, but I never did. We actually never even had to go down the side of the mountain to look for a disc, which was pretty shocking. But it was a ton of fun. I don't know how much I would play it if I was a local, simply because I wouldn't want to have to go search for discs down the hill would be the only reason. The lines at Ask were great. The elevation changes were a lot more drastic than they seemed on camera.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really nostalgic course. Every hole we walked up to, I felt like I remembered.
I would say the best part of it was the nostalgia.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good course.
But
it wasn't mind-blowing, but it was pretty good.
I stand by my take that it should not be on the Pro Tour. And now I have even more reasons. I it was too gimmicky, and it wasn't hard enough for a Pro Tour level player. And now that I've been out there, I don't know how spectators didn't die out there.
It's like scary. It's really scary.
We were walking up from our car, so you park in the parking lot.
People who play there are going to be like, it's not a big deal.
Because you walk over.
They're probably so used to it.
You walk over, and there's like shouts coming from the mountaintops. Yeah. And you just look up, and discs are raining down on you.
Walk up, and you just hear five people yelling like every 2 minutes. Yeah. Parking lot! Parking lot!
Yeah.
Because there's this disc roaring towards the park. You're not even safe in your car.
The disc might go through your windshield. And like, so literally,
if you throw a little too far on the top of the world shot, which is very easy to do.
Yeah.
Then your cars get you're busting a windshield.
And if you pull it by 10, 15 feet from the top of the world, it'll end up being 50 or 60 feet down there, and that puts you next to hole one's tee.
Yeah.
And then we get to hole one's tee, and someone's throwing from like hole five or something and rips a forehand between the two protectors and misses Trevor's face by like 2 inches.
Trevor almost had to go to the hospital.
We walked up to hole one, and like, we just, stuff's happening all around. I'm like, we need to get off this course. We're about to die.
Maybe it was just a rough day. Like, maybe it was just a coincidence that stuff kept on happening, but it had us on edge. Like, literally, every hole we were on, we were like,
I was just waiting. Like, people would yell four, and you just like hit the deck.
Yeah.
Like,
it was terrifying. And as a guy who's gotten stitches from a disc before, I was about to cry every second I was out there.
It was brutal. Top of the world was a ton of fun to throw. We threw like three or four each. We didn't have to call a parking lot. Someone we were playing with let one rip, and immediately someone goes, parking lot! And then like it just echoed throughout the course because everyone started yelling it, because it's like, hey, if you're getting out of your car, you might get hit with a disc.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrifying.
It's a funny community out there, though.
Yeah.
Just the people who are just constantly ready.
Decked
by a disc.
It was crazy. We also got to play Oak Grove, the first ever permanent public disc golf course.
That was cool.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
Just the story. We got to meet the course designer, one of the course designers. It was a group. Mark was his name. And he was telling us the history. And also, he was going on about how he thinks putting in disc golf's way too easy. That was electric.
It was awesome.
It was a great trip. He's a cool guy. Ton of fun. I'm rocking the West Coast Tour shirt. You can check out this shirt and a bunch of other stuff over at Flippy Disc Golf as well. You can use code FOUNDATION10. Save yourself 10%. Not sponsoring today's episode. Just free shout out there. But anyways, back to it to round out the show. Most underrated disc in the game right now. Connor, go on the spot.
Oh my gosh. On the spot? Underrated disc in the game right now. Go. I'm going with... I'll just say a disc, but I'm gonna kind of go with a like area, a genre of disc. Okay, all right,
that's fine.
Mid ranges that don't go that far. How about
okay,
like a rock.
Okay,
it goes plenty far enough. But all these people are getting all hyped up about the Hex. I was there like a week ago, and like, but like discs like that, everybody freaks out about what disc goes the furthest. But sometimes you don't need the furthest flying disc in that slot. Sometimes that doesn't help you. I was out playing with a friend yesterday. He's got a Hex in his bag. Just started, is Jason on. He just started playing. And he's way better than almost anyone I've met that just started playing. But he is throwing this Hex. We were playing Timbrook. We were playing Fallen Creek a few weeks ago. He had that Hex, was bombing it. It was insane. I was like, oh my gosh, I wish I could throw my Hex like that. It's insane. Then we go out to Timbrook, where he's not throwing it as hard as he can because it's like a 200-foot hole or 180-foot hole, and we have like a tight gap or whatever, and every single time it's just heising like crazy out of his hand. Now, that's a disc choice thing as well, but that thing's barely a mid-range, and it's just like so many of the pros throw stuff like that because they're throwing it in place of a fairway driver or a distance driver a lot of times, and they're playing a lot longer courses than we play. Like that makes sense, but like, I don't know. I think everybody hypes up over, like, this is the furthest throwing putter I've ever thrown. This is the furthest throwing mid-range I've ever thrown. This FD goes further than all of my distance drivers. But it's like, maybe you don't always need that. Like, sometimes I just need a disc that I don't have to throw as hard as I can, but will still flip up and turn.
There you go. Wow.
Also, consequently, I just took every mid-range out of my bag and replaced them with rocks.
Heck yeah. Welcome back.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. I was on the West Coast. We went to a used section at a store. I picked up a flat-top Glow KC rock that felt just like one I used to have, and I said, I'm going back. I can't help it. As soon as it touched
my
fingers,
come back.
It felt too much like home, and now I have 4 KC rocks in my bag.
Yeah, it happens quick.
It does.
Yeah.
Well, I just go to my collection and grab all of them. I had 6 in there, but it wasn't because, like, I thought that was smart. I used to, but like I just had to throw them all to see which ones I wanted to keep in there. I got down to 4, and I'll boil it down a little more after that.
I'm going with one that I think will surprise some people, but I actually tweeted this out and might have put it on my Instagram too. I'm going with the ESP zone.
Yeah.
Because I think, okay, so when people want that zone slot, they're looking for, like, for a long time, people were looking for the most overstable zone. The Zone OS is a little bit too overstable for what people were looking for with that. And the Zone OS is its own slot, but people are always looking for the most overstable zone, most overstable zone.
Unless,
blah, blah, blah.
Unless you want a Zone OS that's actually kind of usable, get the ESP Tour Series Zone OS with the foundation stamp on the top. Have we released those yet?
Yeah. Okay. They came out back last Friday.
I wanted to make sure I didn't spoil anything.
No.
Go check those out because they're sick.
Yeah. There's still a few left, not a ton. So you might have to go quick. But the ESP zone, I never threw one because people always told me, they're like, it's not really a zone. Like,
yeah, if you want a zone, you want an overstable
zone. You want the Z
zone, yeah.
You want the Z flex, you want crystal flex, blah. Well, randomly, one came in, ESP one puddle top, felt incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I put it in my bag.
Yeah.
And I started throwing it, and what I realized was it had the zone flight with a ton more glide.
Mm-hmm.
So I could get zone flights with way less effort. And then if I ripped on it, I could get a dead straight forehand approach.
Or a dead straight backhand, too.
Or a dead straight backhand, too. It still had enough stability to laugh at headwinds, but it wasn't going to, like, bite out of it. So it really ended up complementing, I have a Zone OS in my bag, but a really overstable zone in general. The ESP zone was, like, a perfect complement. And I feel like people either go jawbreaker zone, which is, like, flip up, literally dead straight, and kind of almost flippy at times.
Once it gets beat in.
Or they go to the Z zone. Mm-hmm. When I think the ESP zone is what a lot of people are looking for. Where, like, if you put it on hyzer, it's going to stay on that angle.
Yeah.
But it's not going to dump.
Well, I almost feel like if you're looking for a zone, like, if you want a zone for what a zone is, yeah, get an overstable zone. But, like, if you don't, like, I would still, like, throw an ESP zone because you'll find that it does fit in your bag. Because I just, like, I threw it backhand, and I was like, I don't ever throw zones backhands unless I'm throwing a hyzer or an approach shot where I just want to throw a hard hyzer. And then I threw the ESP zone backhand, and it went so straight, and then just with the fade at the end, it was just like the most consistent, I can throw this dead straight with a hard finish, and I can't do that with my other ESP zone. It's too stable, or my Z zone is too stable, or my Get Freaky zone is too stable. And so it almost like opened up a new slot in my bag that I didn't realize I wanted. And that's where, like, now I have, like, yeah, I have an ESP zone in my bag, one that somebody died for us. And then I just put a Zone OS in.
Yeah.
But I had the Toro in there. But
there you have it. Yeah. I think the ESP zone could be what you're looking for. It's that
a great disc.
That wraps it up. We'll talk to you again next week. Again, we'll update the power rankings when Trevor's back next week. So I don't know if y'all updated them last week or not.
No.
So it's been a while. So things are probably going to get really shooketh up on that power ranking list. But we'll talk to you then.